an Australian town called Massacre Plains, an old man has died. Albert Gondawindi and his wife Elsie lived at the old Aboriginal mission where he grew up, and it was there that they raised their granddaughters, August and Jedda. When August returns home for her Poppy's funeral, she has to confront a past she had hoped to escape and try to save the family home, which is now under threat. The Yield is a new novel by the Australian writer Tara June Winch, which also celebrates and documents the Wiradjuri language of New South Wales. Tara's usually based in France, but she's back in Australia to launch the book. Hi, Tara.
Hello.
Tara, the first character we meet in your book is Albert Gondawindi. He's nearing the end of his life, and he's been working on this dictionary of words from what he calls the old language. I thought maybe we could start with you reading to me from the first chapter when we get to meet Albert.
I'd love to. One, I was born on Nurumbang. Can you hear it? Nurumbang. If you say it right, it hits the back of your mouth and you should taste blood in your words. Every person around should learn the word for country in the old language, the first language, because that is the way to all time, to time travel. You can go all the way back. My daddy was Buddy Gondawindi and he died a young man by the hands of a bygone disease. My mother was Augustine and she died an old woman by the grip of, well, it was an old world disease too. Yet nothing ever really dies. Instead, it all goes beneath your feet, beside you, part of you. Look there, grass on the side of the road, tree bending in the wind, fish in the river, fish on your plate, fish feeding you. Nothing is ever gone. Soon, when I change, I won't be dead. I always memorise John 11:26. Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Yet life rushed through me and past me as it will for each person.
How beautiful. That's Tara June Winch reading from her new novel, The Yield. In this book, Tara, we see Albert's dictionary. He's working on his own dictionary of the old language. And it's a wonderful thing for us to read because as readers, we get to learn a whole host of Wiradjuri words. How important was it for you to document this language in your novel?
Well, it became part of the entire idea and narrative. I had the idea back in 2004 when I was researching Swallow the Air.
Your first novel.
Yeah. And I did a language course, a Wiradjuri language course out at Wagga Wagga, and I bought, you know, the big old A4 yellow dictionaries that Uncle Stan Grant Sr. and Dr. John Rutter, linguist, had put together. They were revitalising the Wiradjuri language. And I used that dictionary and used maybe 3 or 4 words from the Wiradjuri language in Swallow the Air. But I wanted to put more. I knew that, but I didn't know. I didn't want to overwhelm the reader. And I knew it was going to be a project for further down the line, but I just didn't think it was going to take 15 years.
Well, it's like learning a new language. I mean, I guess that's not really that surprising.
I completely relied on, and I have to say, like, hats off 100%, and please look into their resources, the work of Dr. Stan Grant Sr. and Dr. John Rutter. What they've done to save the Wiradjuri language is incredible.
So that's a text they wrote in 2005, a new Wiradjuri dictionary.
Yeah, and they're constantly doing, engaging in community and working with elders to add to the dictionary because it's a living thing and it changed some of the spelling changes or you know, there might be a discussion where a word is decided doesn't fit. So I really had to put that disclaimer at the end of the book too that this is my interpretation and that Poppy Albert's dictionary is this work in progress.
What you do with this language is so wonderful because we see Albert list these words. He gives the definition as he understands it, but it also allows him to tell his story. I was really thinking about this because as a writer, obviously, you're interested in language, and I wondered what this beautiful old language offered you in terms of storytelling that English perhaps couldn't offer you.
I think what happens, and bilingual people, trilingual people, multilingual people understand that yourself in one language is not your complete self in another language. And I felt as if I understood more of my culture, my ancestors, and the tragedy that my father missed out on having this language around him as a child. What was fascinating in terms of coming at it as a writer is that there were words that had those multiple meanings that sort of captured the true essence of the emotion. For an example, there's a word called nyaran, and it means weak, hungry, and depressed. And I have bouts of depression, the black dog, myself. And I know it's not sadness and it's not simply grief or summed up as the word depression, but there's weakness and there's a hunger. Yeah, words having complexity and words capturing, you know, the whole spectrum of what it is. It's incredible.
Poppy Albert has such great advice for that word, nyaran, as well. He says, you should never say this word too loud because it will catch you hard. When you say the thing, sometimes you become the thing.
Yes.
It's a beautiful observation.
Well, I think Poppy is like a mix of my late grandfather on my mother's side and also my dad, the way he's playful and jokey and like a little bit inventive and camping and being, you know, I don't know. He's a lot of my Poppy and he's a lot of dad, but he's also that internal voice like deep inside me that tells me how to live a good life, that directs me on the right path. So, yeah, there's a lot of the real raw feeling in what Poppy's advising his family on what to do, how to live a good life.
Tara, that's one aspect of the book, is Albert's dictionary. But in another strand, we get to meet Albert's granddaughter, August. She's returning home to Massacre Plains after her grandfather's death, and she ran away from home a long time ago. Why did August run away?
I'm just thinking about August, and then I think about myself, because I ran away for years too. For August, she had this idea, she read a lot as a kid, and she had this idea that the literature she read didn't have a place for her growing up in the 80s. And the 80s and 90s, and that everything that was important, seemed important to the rest of the world, didn't happen in Australia and didn't happen in her small town, and especially didn't happen to her family and people like her. So I think she ran away because she thought that what she was looking for was really far away. But it wasn't. It was internal, and it was right there in those 500 acres where she grew up. But also, she kind of kept a promise to her older sister, who is missing at the beginning of the novel, that she would go to England, and she would, you know, they adore Princess Diana when they're little kids, and they think that England is this place where kids wear long socks and there's cobblestone streets and magic. But they have this the romantic idea of the colonial home, which is society is kind of ingrained in them. Yeah, I think that's where she goes.
You mentioned, you know, you see a bit of yourself in her. You ran away to France, I guess. she comes home and, you know, has to adjust to that. I mean, you must have some observation about this too, Tara, about coming back and returning to your homeland after so much time away. And does Australia strike you as a strange place when you come back to it with a bit of an outsider's perspective?
No, not at all. It's just home. It's so the most incredible country on earth that I've ever been to, and I think I'll always believe that. It's the birds, the sky, the people, nature, the natural world, everything. The way people say hello and or smile at you in the street, everything. I love it so much. I mean, there's issues. We have issues, but this is. I love coming back to Australia, and I come back with huge appreciation that I think I struggled with as a teenager. You know, it's really special.
Isn't it good to know we've all come away from being a teenager?
Yeah, I'm just dealing with it now because I have a teenager at the moment. So I'm sort of looking at the world through my eyes, having survived teenagehood, and the Julie as my daughter views it. Yeah, it's super fascinating. Sorry to all the mums out there.
But look, it does help a novelist when you have to write teenage characters, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, let's get back to the story. So August's grandmother, Elsie, she still lives at Prosperous. So this is this old mission where Albert was raised as a young child. And so Albert and Elsie have lived at Prosperous. And I find this so fascinating, Tara, because here in Western Australia, I've also been out to sites of old missions where Aboriginal people have come back to live. And I find that so interesting because these are often places of great cruelty or sadness, yet they're also home.
Right.
Is Prosperous a complicated place for Albert and Elsie?
Of course, because history lived there. The huts where children once slept were rotted and worn to mounds of firewood, you know. So there's evidence on the landscape of where they live. And they live in the old mission church that's been converted and had an extension built. So there's a daily reminder, but at the time there was an opportunity that happened economically for Poppy to come back onto the land and to, you know, have a little corner and treat it sort of almost as his own. And he almost becomes the custodian who welcomes, you know, the old people that had revisited the mission to see what had happened, you know, to face that painful past, to see the place where they spent some of their lives. And so he's there to welcome them, you know. And he says he sometimes old people arrive through the peppermint trees and they just want someone there that will talk to them or just acknowledge them and walk around the property, and they'll point out things that were once there or memories that, you know, that are, yeah, that live in that space, but they can no longer see in physical reality, yeah.
So this is a very important place. Yet in your book, Prosperous, the former mission, is under threat. What is the threat to the property?
From a mining company, there's a tin discovered under the land. And so it's a threat to go to waste. Yeah.
And this really is a bit of an inspiration for August to try and save this home.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right to her that her nana should leave, you know, after everything, after finally coming, her nana having some peace and, you know, spending a beautiful marriage on this piece of land, and it being ancestral land, it doesn't seem right.
Tara, the structure of your book is So ambitious. We haven't even actually talked about the third strand of the book, in which we read this long letter written by the founder of the Prosperous Mission in 1915. So in that part of the book, you're relying on a letter to tell a story. For Albert, you're relying on this series of word definitions, and only August gets a kind of traditional narrative structure. I was just wondering how hard this was for you, Tara, to make all of this work.
I had this quote above my desk when I was working. I'm going to stuff it up. But it was something like, write when two ideas crash together. Something like that. And I just kept looking at it. And I can't even, I looked at it every day for years and I can't even remember it now. But that's the idea of when you perfectly crash two ideas, and this happened to be, you know, maybe three or four, and then you can see all these overlapping themes, and you know that metaphor, it goes here, and it starts to, you know, that's the best time of writing, when you can actually, okay, this is an idea, and this overlaps, and this works. The missionary, he needs to be Lutheran though, and this is the time it needs to be set in. Like, that's the best part of writing, when you have such optimism before it all goes downhill. But yeah, it was pretty tricky.
And you talked about going downhill, but the finished work is a wonderful piece. Are you able to look at this with a lot of pride now?
Not like, no. I mean, the thing is, I look at it and just think, it was the publisher, I really had to pry it from my hands to go to print, because I just thought, oh God, I could keep writing. There's so many issues to write about. I wanted to talk about issues of, you know, youth suicide and incarceration, but talk about them very, very delicately and not in a didactic way, but get my feelings across. And you could have kept writing. All First Nations writers could keep writing and writing, and, you know, until their last day, about what they really want to say, you know? Yeah. But then in the same way, I feel that language is such a healing tool that should be used in rehabilitation instead of, you know, incarceration, that I did somehow then talk about it inadvertently, about, I don't know, you know, I just think it's super powerful to learn the old language and reconnect with culture. It's so healing, and hopefully more Australians believe that too.
Well, I certainly got so much out of this book. Congratulations, Tara. It's been really wonderful to meet you today.
Thank you.
The Yield by Tara June Winch is published by Hamish Hamilton.